I'm Winsor Johnston with more NPR News.
And good morning. Welcome to Cool Science Radio, science and technology in a complicated world that is interesting, fun, and understandable. I'm John Wells. I'm here with my co-host Beth Fratkin, who's filling in for Lynn Ware Peake, who is, as we say, off on assignment. Beth is the producer of Cool Science Radio, and I'm delighted to have her with me this morning. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Park City. It's nice to be behind the mic again. I'm enjoying my imitation of Lynn for today, and I hope you are too. Our first guest this morning is Rebecca Coffey. She's the author of 20 Things That You Didn't Know About Stress. And that was recently published in Discover Magazine. And I'm getting a little anxious even thinking about it, but hopefully she'll give us some good tips about how to alleviate it as well. By the way, Rebecca Coffey also wrote a very interesting novel that we might have to put on one of our shows later in the month. It's about Anna Freud, Freud, of course, and it's called Hysterical, Anna Freud's Story. And if you didn't know before this, Anna Freud was a lesbian, and Freud himself thought that that was the worst moral pit that any woman could ever fall into. It's very interesting. So
Anna was the daughter of Sigmund.
That's correct.
Not his wife. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I said wife. Sorry.
No, you didn't say that. I just wanted to.
Whatever. But Rebecca Coffey is an interesting person, and I think you're really going to enjoy this interview.
And our second guest this morning, Jason Silva, National Geographic host of Brain Games, who's going to be with us to discuss National Geographic's very cool Expedition Granted. Do you want a shot at $50,000 to fund the project you've always dreamed of? Well, our second guest, will tell you what this competition is about and how to apply for the competition. These two guests plus today's cool story when we return. You're listening to Cool Science Radio, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Michelle from Peak Art and Frame, proud supporters of KPCW. Locally owned and operated, Peak Art and Frame features local photography and artwork, as well as digital printing, custom framing, and mirrors. Open 7 days a week, rush service available, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801, peakartandframe.com.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio on this Thursday morning. Excuse me. I'm Beth Fratkin, and I'm here with John Wells, and we are talking about stress today. Did you know that money, work, economic outlook, family, and relationships are the top five stressors of all time? I could have probably told you that, but it's always nice to hear that your instincts are right. Stress is tied to heart disease, hypertension, inflammatory diseases, and possibly cancer. And stress can literally break your heart. Our first guest this morning is Rebecca Coffey, and she'll tell us even more about this silent killer. Rebecca is the author of 20 Things You Didn't Know About Stress that was recently published in Discover Magazine. Rebecca, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
And we're glad you are here. Can you tell us a little bit about these top five stressors and how scientists determined that they were the ones that were the most deadly?
Well, there's been the American Psychological Association does these surveys, and they call around, and they do extensive interviews by phone with Americans in large numbers. And these five factors are pretty consistent. So with teenagers, they would add in that school is a stressor as opposed to work.
Well, that makes sense, but another thing I was wondering about was, aren't these some of the same things that make you feel really good about yourself?
Well, a certain amount of stress is a wonderful thing in your life. It wakes up your whole brain. And there's a whole host of research in a field called mastery that shows that learning that you are in control of those things that are upsetting you, learning that you have an effect on them, is a joyful experience. There were studies done with children who were newborns, and they lay them on their back, and their heads, if they pressed their heads back, they could make a mobile over their bed whirl, and the mobile was completely stable unless the baby's pressed on the back, on their mattress with the back of their head. And the ones who figured it out expressed glee as much as a newborn could express glee upon learning that. And, they would wiggle their feet. They would make little cooing noises. They loved, even in the first days of life, to realize that they could control things. So, yes, a certain amount of stress enlivens us.
And Salt Lake City has a distinction in your article. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that article is a few years old, and so that data is a few years old. Salt Lake City was ranked the least stressful and basically most wonderful place to live. Now, there's more recent data from Gallup, and the data that my article looked at was mixing concerns about stress with reports of enjoyment, right? And it's difficult to separate that out. Am I not feeling stressed because actually everything around me is lovely and my neighbors are wonderful people? What Gallup did was call 350,000 Americans and ask them two questions. Did you feel stressed yesterday, and do you enjoy your life? It was that simple. And by those measures, Utah as a state ranks very interestingly. It was right behind Hawaii in enjoyment. People love living in Utah, but it was of the five states where the people complained most about stress, it was number four. So I'd like you to tell me what's going on there. The people of Utah complain about stress, but they love their lives. Well, and it's the only state to have that kind of stress.
Well, it's always been my experience that when I drive down to Salt Lake and I'm on I-15, I feel like I'm about to have a heart attack. So maybe the traffic has something to do with it.
Right. Maybe traffic.
And it's growing so quickly. The whole state is growing really quickly that maybe, I don't know, that causes me stress. But here I am in an idyllic Park City, and I spend half of it stressed out anyway. So
I'll take a shot at that, Rebecca. And
okay.
I'm from Boston and moved here about 3.5 years ago. And my career in technology, I spent a lot of time on airplanes. I probably flew, I'd say, 4 days a week. And getting to the airport in Boston was very difficult. You had to get up at, dark 100 and tons of traffic. Everybody's giving you the state bird. And, it was just very, very stressful. And then I moved here. And it's not like that at all. There's never any traffic. Everyone's very chilled and that sort of thing. And yet, I've met so many people from Salt Lake and from Park City that said, wow, there sure was a lot of traffic today, and they're a little stressed out by it, and there was no traffic at all. Even the same day that I was on, like, Interstate 80, they said, geez, it was a little crazy today, and I'm thinking, I think I saw three trucks. So, maybe that has something to do with it. They've got great quality of life, but they've become accustomed to no traffic. I think if they went to Boston, they'd probably kill themselves.
Yeah, the roundabouts
and change
would do
is difficult. Yes, the roundabouts alone. But change is difficult, so their whole world is changing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why they're reporting stress. But they are the only state who have reported high levels of stress and high levels of life enjoyment.
Can you elaborate on that statement you just said about change is stressful?
Well, our brains are wired to react to new information with surges of cortisol and adrenaline. And there have been some interesting studies done just of how animals respond to predators or even notice predators. What you notice is movement. So we are really, really keyed into noticing a blade of grass moving. Animals are, and by extension, we are. So change is something that arouses our stress hormones. And so change is difficult, unless you feel mastery over it, in which case change is fun.
Yeah,
but I imagine...
Is that why some people do thrill-seeking activities, because
absolutely.
It increases their...
Absolutely. My son is a skydiver and a scuba diver, and he just does a bunch of crazy things that make me very afraid to even talk to him about. And I asked him why he does it, and he said, there's such a zen moment when you're about to do something stupid like that, when you're about to jump out of an airplane, and you have to calm yourself completely. And that it's that moment of conquering the fear that he seeks.
Well, that makes a certain amount of sense, I would think. What about, going back to the origins of stress, it was the fight or flight syndrome from our amygdala that kind of originated the physical properties of stress. So now that we don't have as much to be afraid of, why is it what is it that makes us still put out those kinds of chemicals that are potentially harmful?
Well, I think for different people, the answer is different. Some people some children are raised in very stressful environments, violent homes, or not enough to eat, or violence on the street, and that they acquire a stress response at such an early age that it's hardwired and maladaptive for the rest of their lives. I don't remember what I was going to say for the rest of us, other than stress is fun.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us have heard that elevated cortisol is responsible for a lot of the problems that... suppresses the immune system, elevates blood sugar, impedes bone formation, as you stated in your article. Interesting, I didn't know this, that you say that the next generation pays a price. And researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, found an association between high cortisol in mothers during late pregnancy and lower IQs in their children.
Yeah, that's very tragic. And also higher autism.
Yeah, stress during pregnancy has been linked to offspring with autism. That's incredible.
Right. Now, one of the guidance that we get from doctors is if you're feeling stressed, go out and exercise. Well, I think that the wealth of lab experiments on rodents should warn us that we should only do that if we really want to. Because if you put a mouse or a rat on a treadmill, that raises its cortisol and adrenaline level.
Yeah.
So that if you really take to exercise, getting out and doing it for a half an hour is not going to make you feel more relaxed.
Well, that's the wrong city to hear that advice, huh? Park City's very active.
Yeah, it seems like well, such a good contradiction to me. But I guess the science proves me wrong.
Hey, Rebecca, you also wrote 20 things you didn't know about spiders and 20 things you didn't know about, the periodic table. And
yes.
Something about spiders I found fascinating in your article. I know that some of these spiders can kill you pretty quick, but you mentioned here the venom of the Australian funnel web spider can kill a person in less than an hour. I understand that. But its fangs can bite right through a leather shoe. That's pretty scary.
That is. There are no deadly spiders in Vermont that I know of. And I had a long, wonderful interview, I don't remember his name, with the man who was the spider wrangler on arachnophobia. and he talked to me about how you herd spiders and how you do a head count at the beginning and the end of the shoot so that you make sure that you gather up as many spiders as you release, and how the almost all of the spiders in arachnophobia were his spiders. Very, very few of them were mechanical, except for the really huge one was
right.
A mechanical spider.
Right. So there wasn't a lot of CGI there. Those are real spiders.
No. Those were really real spiders. And how he herds them is with hair dryers. They don't like warm air.
So he would blow
hair dryers where he didn't want them to go, and they would all go the other way.
That's great to know, because I think I need to herd a few spiders in my kitchen.
Rebecca, you don't have the brown recluse in Vermont?
I don't know for sure that we don't. My mother, about 40 years ago, was bitten by a brown recluse when she was trying on a dress that had been in her closet for a long time.
Right.
And that was very bad, but it didn't kill her.
Right. You know, we had a guest, Beth, you might remember this, on our show at Cool Science Radio, maybe about 6 months ago, and we're talking about a bunch of things, and regarding people's fear of spiders and fear of snakes, we're talking about that, and he said 6 million years ago, when humanoids split from chimps and bonobos and came down from the trees, prior to that, our ancestors were... You know, their biggest enemy was snakes and spiders, and some sort of genetic memory has been implanted on us. So people who are like totally freaked out by spiders may have, this might go back 6 million years ago when their ancestors had very bad experiences.
Right. While you were saying that, I started furiously Googling. I'm looking.
Fast.
Here it is.
She is quick, isn't she?
Yeah, except that I entered the wrong keywords. Okay, because I did an article for psychologytoday.com about snakes and our fear of snakes being imprinted on us from way, way, way before we were humans. And I wish I could find it. Maybe I talk about something else and I'll come up with it as I Google. But spiders and... spiders and snakes are the two very, very early predators. Snakes have been around for as long as any sort of mammal has been.
Well, this is a little back to the original subject, but I can't let you leave without telling us about addled brain syndrome and what it is and what the symptoms are, because I might have it.
Addled brain syndrome?
Yes.
I don't even know. Do I mention that in my article?
Was that in the article?
It was one of the what happened to rats when they were subject to too much stress.
And I loved what they equated. They were trying to build a model of stressed rats that would equate with the kind of stress that people experience every day. And what they did to the rats that was supposed to be analogous to our everyday stress was they picked them up and hung them by their tails. And ever since I read that research, That is how I have felt some days, as though someone is picking me up and holding me by my tail.
So when I feel like that, I'll know that I need to go home and lie down for a while.
Right.
I think a lot has to do with attitude. If we don't worry about what we can't control, and if we just, you know, and even if it's not true, but if we just say to ourselves, everything's going to be okay. You know, you don't like your son-in-law. This happens. That happens. Oh, my goodness. What's going to happen next? Everything's going to be fine.
Right.
But that might be too simplistic. I don't know, but seems to work.
Well, what you're doing is assuring yourself of some sort of mastery over the situation. But it also harkens back to what they'll tell you in an AA meeting or an Al-Anon meeting, which is you've got to learn to stop trying to control the things that you can't control.
Absolutely. Just if you can't control them, why worry about them?
Right. Right. Now, there have been attempts for years to come up with a stress vaccine, and those have failed, and I believe they should fail, because I think a stress vaccine would stupefy us and take the pleasure out of life.
Are you referring to vodka on ice?
With a little lime.
Okay.
And rats, speaking of substance abuse and stress, rats given access to cocaine, if you stress them, they will overdose on cocaine.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, who could blame them, really?
But which is first, the stress or the cocaine?
The stress is first. They've structured the experiment so that they have access to the cocaine and they ignore it until they get stressed, and then they really...
Well, we have really appreciated our conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining us. I just want to also mention once again to our audience that you are the author of Hysterical, Anna Freud Story, and that has recently been published and is available in your local bookstores, and it's a very interesting read as well.
Thank you. Yes, it's the fact-based fictional autobiography of Sigmund Freud's smartest daughter.
Yeah, it's excellent. We really enjoyed our conversation, and
thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks to Rebecca, sure. And we'll be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned.
350 Main Brasserie is pleased to support KPCW. 350 Main is located in the historic Golden Rule Building at 350 Main Street and serves contemporary American cuisine with a summer menu including produce from their urban garden, open nightly at 5:30 p.m. Reservations, menu, and contact information at 350main.com.
Nexus IT is proud to have supported KPCW for the past 10 years. Nexus IT provides on-premise and cloud voice over IP phone systems and service that simplify and unify your business telecommunications. 435-487-9099, nexusitc.net.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. We're just talking with Rebecca Coffey, author of 20 Things You Didn't Know About Stress and 20 Things You Didn't Know About Spiders. Our next guest is Jason Silva, National Geographic host of The Brain Games, who will be with us to discuss National Geographic's Expedition Granted. This is a National Geographic $50,000 contest to fund someone's dream expedition. Jason, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much.
Well, I have to ask you first, Jason, about curiosity. You have been called, you know, one of the curious minds of our time, and this all ties into your show, which you host, Brain Games, on National Geographic Channel. In Expedition Granted, we're talking about curiosity. Tell us a little bit about your curiosity and where it's taken you.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the term coined by Carl Sagan in his novel Contact. He came up with the term wonder junkie. And the wonder junkie is the person who is just addicted to discovery, right? Addicted to understanding. I was once told that I was addicted to cognitive ecstasy, which is, you know, whatever happens in that brain, that exhilarating neurostorm of intellectual pleasure that you get when you discover something new, right? You transcend the been there's and done that's of the adult mind, and you see the world through the eyes of a child. You stand there awestruck or wonderstruck with your mouth gaped open, and you're just in awe. And whatever happens in the brain during those moments, which I kind of refer to playfully as a mindgasm, is something that I, as a little kid, I wanted to retain. I just never wanted to grow up in that sense. I had the Peter Pan thing. I was like, I don't want to become an adult with nodding resignation. You know, I want to be curious and to stay curious. And that's always been my thing.
Well, and so how did you convince maybe your parents and yourself that you could maintain that curiosity and continue in that thread, because so many of us sort of move on to other things and forget about that curious mind that we once possessed.
Totally. Well, I was lucky in that sense. You know, my mom is a teacher. She taught high school English literature, and so I grew up in a household that was all of celebration of intellectual inquiry. She's also an artist, so I grew up in a place of sculpture and poetry and art, and she always told me to follow my bliss. So the environment that I grew up in encouraged that curiosity and that inquiry. And then when I went for college, I studied philosophy and film because I loved cinema. I loved media as a conduit for catharsis and for illumination and for discovery. And then I was always a cerebral guy, so philosophy fit in with that as well. And the combination of philosophy and film then resulted in sort of a passion project of videos that I started doing on the internet called Shots of Awe, which are like these philosophical espresso videos, like mind trailers that explore technology, singularity, you know, existentialism, the human condition through the eyes of me, in a sense, you know, kind of like video diaries that explode with the big ideas. And those videos then led to Brain Games. So everything has kind of happened organically, and I've always used my kind of curiosity, my hunger for knowledge as a kind of compass.
Well, we've looked at those videos, and Jason, you need to come out of your shell because you need some enthusiasm.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, I'm so quiet and mellow in those videos. I need to pump some more energy into them, huh?
I tell you what, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I really get a kick out of it. I think Lynn and I are both of the curious type. I mean, to start the show in the first place, the two of us are
right,
always looking under every rock to find out everything that's going on. I wanted to ask you about Expedition Granted. Can you tell us about this program?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting, right? So the whole thing, National Geographic is such a legacy brand, right? I mean, I grew up in Venezuela. My dad had the entire collection of those yellow magazines of Nat Geo. So I've known the brand my entire life. It's global. Everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. And it's associated, of course, with the frontier, right? What's the next frontier? What's the next, the perimeters of the possible, exploration, you know, the new. And I think that now that the brand is sort of back in the limelight with the success of shows like Brain Games and this genre that Brain Games leads of smartertainment and celebration of curiosity that's now becoming such a hit on television, you know, with these ratings, it's just an opportunity to bring back that conversation about what Nat Geo stands for, which is exploration, right? Exploring the unknown, transcending the frontier. And so through Expedition Granted, we're doing essentially that. We're redefining the concept of exploration. And it's a contest to basically find the new generation of explorers and then grant one person's dream expedition for $50,000. So it doesn't matter if you're the one that wins. The goal really is to find a whole new generation of people who are pushing the boundaries, who are pushing the buttons, who are exploring in some particular field, you know, whether it's exploring outer space or inner space or somewhere in between. And it's very simple. People can submit a 2-minute video, tweetable elevator pitch at expeditiongranted.com. They can outline their passion project and why it deserves to be granted by August 31st. And then the videos are going to be considered as finalists based on originality, impact, and viability. And then these finalists are going to be judged by a council of notable experts across a wide range of specialties, art, food, social science, tech, filmmaking, journalism, engineering, the environment, and more. So there's a nice group of people there that we'll get to then evaluate and look over the finalists. But it's going to be really cool, and it's an opportunity for people really to tell us how they're pushing the boundaries.
I love the list of advisors. I mean, you, as you said, a filmmaker, a psychiatrist, you have a celebrated chef, a science evangelist, journalist, futurist, avid outdoors people. I mean, it's really an interesting group of people.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a great group, and I think the submissions are going to be awesome.
And so has this expedition granted taken place before, or will this be the first time?
I think this is the first iteration of this format that the network is doing, this expedition granted thing. I mean, the way they're doing it with the $50,000, having the people submit online, you know, we know that everybody's got a smartphone, everybody's got a video on their smartphone, a video camera, so people can really, you know, they can very easily make these really cool submissions, you know, they can probably put some nice video filters on them, maybe edit them a little bit. And then, you know, to have the tweetable pitch idea is very cool as well. How do they summarize it in 140 characters or less? And, you know, put the whole package together. The slick video, the 140-character tweetable pitch, and then submit it through the website. And I think it's going to be fun. I think we're going to have a nice little... I'm not sure if all the submissions are going to be displayed to the public, but they might be. But in any case, it'll be a nice repository of people sharing their passion. So I think that's very exciting.
Will the public vote at all, or will it be this board of advisors?
No, I think the public gets to vote at first, and then it gets to the finalists will then get to the board of advisors.
Yes.
That's what the press release, I believe, says. Mm-hmm. I'm just confirming that, but yes.
Yeah, okay. So,
yes.
You know, John and I talk to a lot of interesting people on Cool Science Radio, and most of those tend to be these high school kids who have come up with, different types of, I don't know, robotics or other.
Yeah.
It's usually having to do with science and technology. But, you know, what if you've taken your project already to a science fair or something like that, and it's already developed? Is this something that can also be entered, or is it something that needs to be just a concept and then National Geographic Channel and the advisors help them develop?
You know what? I think it's very open. You know, we're asking people to tell us. Anyone, you know, who has a big idea and a passion can come to life, you know, to bring that to life as an explorer. And I think, again, it's if you already have some funding but you want more funding, tell us why. Tell us why what you've already done is so impactful and why this additional, you know, monetary reward would be helpful to take it to the next level. Or if you're somebody who's at the very early stages of their expedition, tell us why your expedition is worthy of this $50,000 investment. I think you're coming from a place where we're redefining exploration, which means it's wide open, and it's up to the people to make the case of why what they're doing is worthy of this investment. So it's really up to the people. We're putting very few restrictions in that.
I like that.
Yeah, the grant restrictions,
yeah.
It's a small paragraph. The pre-application
right.
is five really short bullets. It's very, very open, as you say.
Exactly, which I think is great, because if we're redefining, then we can't constrain what redefining means.
Yeah.
We have to leave it wide open.
You know, when I look at this list of the advisors, again, you know, great group, celebrated chef, psychiatrist, musician, futurist, I'm reminded of a common theme that we have on Cool Science Radio. If we're speaking with a nanotechnologist or a cold fusion person or a paleontologist or an astrophysicist, in talking to them about their passion, about their work and what they're doing, increasingly we're finding that these people and these organizations are not these little single islands, but they're collaborating with biologists and artists and musicians, and this is something that Lynn and I have observed really over the last 10 years or so, and it's very exciting, this whole collaboration, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've never had such tools with which to collaborate, right? I mean, you know, obviously the internet has revolutionized the way we sort of share and process information together. We're building a global network. We have, like, smartphones connected to the web at almost high-speed internet speeds at this point. And so basically we are transcending normal limitations that used to get in the way. You know, the ability to collaborate with people across the world, the ability to share passions, to share projects, to share ideas is creating a space of just such innovation, such ideas, so to speak. You know, there's a great book by Stephen Johnson called Where Good Ideas Come From, where he talks about the rise of creativity in big cities. When you put people together in dense spaces,
They're allowed to have people from different walks of life collide, connect, communicate, brainstorm. He talks about the rise of the coffee shop. Put people in small coffee shops, dense spaces, give them caffeine, lots of ideas emerge. And so in a way, the internet has created a global coffee shop, a global city, where really interest and passion is the only thing that matters, because mountains don't get in the way. Distance doesn't get in the way. And so it just allows for our own disposition to collaborate and to come together to be amplified in ways that would have been unfathomable a couple decades ago.
And on the technical side, we've had performant processors, and slowly but surely we've gotten more system software and application software tools. But really, when bandwidth became available, anybody can play. So somebody from object poverty in India can connect and can connect with anybody.
Oh, 100%. I think it's Ray Kurzweil, who's now the head of engineering at Google, likes to say in his keynotes that a young person with a smartphone in Africa today has better communications technology than the U.S. president had 25 years ago. So when you have that kind of democratization, you know, when you have that kind of access all of a sudden, you know, those people are joining the global conversation. Those people are joining. I mean, half of the payments now done in certain places in Africa are done with smartphones. You know, people pay other people using their smartphones. There was a Time magazine cover story about 2 years ago, or maybe a year and a half. It was written by Bill Clinton. It was called A Case for Optimism. And he talks about a 2010 United Nations development study that said, forget about the info-haves and the info-nots, because, in fact, the cell phone was one of the greatest inventions in history to pull people out of poverty. So you have these new tools, these new technologies that are accelerating their capacities exponentially, they're shrinking exponentially, their prices are dropping exponentially. All of a sudden, everybody's got a supercomputer in their pocket, and that changes what's possible.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Jason Silva. He's the host of National Geographic Channel's Brain Games, and he's talking about a new contest called Expedition Granted.
Let's talk about Ray Kurzweil.
Sure.
Just fascinating guy. And he, of course, has been involved. I met him many years ago when he had a small business. He had just built a synthesizer. Was involved in music, was involved in technology, had a technology company. And, of course, he came out with the book, The Singularity is Near. What do you think
Great
about
book.
That? And what's going to happen? Well, first of all, singularity is, what, 35, 40 years from now?
Right, yeah.
And what happens?
It's important for people to understand that this word has been getting a lot of buzz lately. But, you know, the singularity is a metaphor, and it's a metaphor that is borrowed from the physics term. You know, and in physics, a singularity is when you go through a black hole, right? And so space, time, whatever normal rules you use to measure the universe, collapse. And so it's a great metaphor to describe something that is kind of ineffable. And ineffable in the sense that it's hard for us to quantify, to measure, to illustrate, to speculate about what the world will look like when we can create non-biological intelligence that is beyond us. It would be like trying to explain a Shakespearean sonnet to a chimpanzee. He doesn't have the mental architecture to contemplate the nuances of poetry. And so when you have exponential technologies, you know, the supercomputer that you call your smartphone today is already a million times cheaper, a million times smaller, and a thousand times more powerful than what used to be half a building in size and $60 million 40 years ago. So what used to be half a building now fits in your pocket. In the next 25 years, what fits in your pocket will be the size of a blood cell inside your brain, further interfacing and augmenting your cognitive capacities. So I mean, the big idea then becomes, when you have that kind of symbiosis with these tools, the new possibilities that emerge are difficult to grasp, you know. When you can be like Neo in the Matrix and learn Kung Fu by downloading it into your brain. When you have Google in your brain, and then you add to that biotechnology revolutions in healthcare and medicine, gene sequencing going three times faster than Moore's Law, and then you add to that nanotechnology breakthroughs, you know, basically turning matter into a programmable medium. So the idea of the singularity is just, it's a metaphor to describe what happens when these three overlapping revolutionary exponential technologies coalesce and become one. You know, Eric Davis, who wrote a marvelous book called Technosis, says, everything becomes linked with everything else. the human design process achieves a kind of infinite velocity, and matter becomes mind.
And nobody knows what's going to happen. We can all think about it, but yeah. it's just we have to get him on the show physically here with us, don't you think?
I think so, Jason.
Yeah.
It's probably been a while since you've been.
He's awesome.
When's the last time you were in Park City?
You know what's funny is that I know these kids that have this conference called the Summit Series that are in Utah, I believe.
Okay.
And they bought a mountain there, and they bring entrepreneurs all the time. Have you heard of this Summit Series?
No, I haven't.
So they've been inviting me to their ski resort, so I might go for that. I've been to Park City with my dad years ago skiing. He loves it, so maybe I should take another visit.
You ought to. I'm wondering, is this group at Eagle Point Ski Resort?
No, is it Powder Mountain?
Oh, Powder Mountain, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I knew there are two groups of tech entrepreneurs that have purchased resorts here. One of those is Powder Mountain. It's getting a big redo. So, you must come out. That's just about an hour from here. So, And certainly stop by Park City. Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, looking at National Geographic magazine, and when you started to talk about it, and your father had the whole series in Venezuela, and, you know, we use words like legacy and iconic, and at the same time, you could also use the word stale if National Geographic did not move along with the time and do this sort of thing, like Expedition, granted, like Brain Games. And so if you would just talk a little bit about the evolving nature of such an institution like National Geographic.
Sure. I mean, I think that's a great question because, things that are legacies, things that are iconic, if they don't evolve, they can quickly become old news, right? Things grow stale if they don't change. You know, we're dynamic creatures and we need the new. But I think that Brain Games, you know, with the success, as you mentioned, of a show like Brain Games, which is, you know, participatory, which gives Nat Geo that fresh hipster millennial edge. You know, young people like it, old people like it, everything in between. Everybody is learning through Brain Games. And, you know, we're ushering in this category of reality television called smartertainment, interactive smartertainment, lean-in programming that, you know, you learn experientially by watching. I think as all of a sudden, you know, everybody's talking about Nat Geo again. You know, everybody wants to emulate Brain Games. Everybody wants to copy that model. And and certainly Expedition Granted and, you know, the support that they've had with their explorers, their in-house resident explorers and residents, and the support they've given me. You know, I'm out there keynoting around the world as the host of Brain Games. So it's just, you know, it's definitely like kind of like that new generation of explorers side by side with the legacy brand, you know.
And there's nothing more exciting when you're with a young person who has this aha moment that, like, this young lady who was in this robotics competition, an all-girls robotics team that won the state championship, who had this aha moment, I want to be an engineer. I never thought about it before. I'm telling you right now, I want to be an engineer. And so, like Brain Games and some of these other tremendous offerings that are encouraging our young people to get involved in STEM, and that's what we need.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's just important for people to realize that smart is cool, curiosity is cool, that kind of hipster, jaded, cynical thing is kind of old now, and like, let's move on and be excited about learning and discovery and transcending boundaries and science and math and art and the whole thing, you know? All the way.
Thank goodness you were born when you were, because you're right in the you're right in the middle of it, aren't you? Just where you want to be.
So
I brought up Brain Games today, and I noticed this a couple episodes, all 10 new episodes for the summer, I believe, but you had one on compassion, which I thought was interesting. Talk a little bit, maybe just about the 10 episodes that you have going, and maybe pick out one that you really like right now.
Yeah, certainly. I think the compassion one is going to be fascinating. You know, we're going to look at whether we are born compassionate beings or whether we learn compassion. We'll look at the idea that says that in a way it's important for us to be compassionate because it makes us see ourselves in the other, and that's what makes, you know, a mother take care of her child. And if a predator is hitting the camp, she's going to, instead of feeding the child to the predator, she's going to rescue that child because that child is a part of her, and then that will result in the offspring surviving. So the ability to see ourselves in the other has been evolutionarily selected for. You know, collaboration, cooperation has gotten us to where we are today as a species. At the same time, you know, there's the environment, there's epigenetics. I mean, you know, you can reinforce that disposition towards compassion, or you can negate it, arrest it, hack it, disrupt it. You know, people who grew up in abusive households, people who grew up isolated, can really have that messed with, you know, and we're going to do all these experiments and play out whether we're born compassionate or whether we more learn it and see which one weighs more heavily in our lives. So that's going to be fascinating. The episode on risk is going to be great. You know, why do human beings love taking risks? You know, well, it's because it's been evolutionarily selected for. When we partake in new, novel things, we explore the perimeters of the possible. It's what made us not stay in the caves. It's what made us be so successful as a species. Taking risks has proven to give rewards. You know, that's why we get dopamine hits when we take risks. We get a rush from it. We're also going to look at addiction, and we're going to look at whether all addictions are bad. We're going to look at good addictions. In what context is addiction a good thing? When are addictions productive? You know, addiction just means you're getting a chemical reward for partaking in an activity. The problem is that activity is destructive, and you're chemically addicted to it. That's the problem. But being chemically addicted to something positive is not a bad thing.
Right. Like brain games.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, this is great. Well, Jason Silva, we're so happy to speak with you today. Again, it's Expedition Granted. All you have to do is go to expeditiongranted.com. You'll find out everything that Jason's been talking about here in terms of this great contest we've got going. It's not really even a contest. It's really about an exploration.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's searching for the next generation of explorers, and one person's dream expedition of $50,000 will be granted. So just encourage everybody to submit the 2-minute video and the tweetable elevator pitch to expeditiongranted.com, and to do it before August 31st.
Lynn, I just found an answer to your question. The advisors, along with the partners, will choose up to 10 finalists, and then they'll be voted on by the public.
Oh, there you go.
So the public's involved.
All right, Jason, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Likewise. Thank
All right.
you, guys.
Okay.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Jason Silva, National Geographic host of Brain Games, and National Geographic's $50,000 contest to fund someone's dream expedition. We'll be right back after these messages. Today's cool story when we return.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows, ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Sponsored in part by Cushman & Wakefield Commerce Commercial Real Estate and Park City Mountain Resort.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. Before we do today's cool story, I wanted to mention that we have a new show on. It's a public affairs show. It's called Mountain Summer. And it's really all things summer in the Wasatch Back. You know, what's happening in Park City this weekend? What is going on in this great town of ours? And in, of course, Colville, Camas, and Heber. And our guest tomorrow will be Melanie Welch, who is going to be talking to us about the Western Day, which will be on Saturday. And she, of course, is with Utah Olympic Park. We'll have Travis English from Summit County Fair, and he's bringing with him Paige Lindsay, who is the 2013 Miss Summit County. And finally, Laurie Backus, who works with the Park Service, and she is responsible for what's happening at the Jordanelle, and she's going to tell us about Fire in the Water, which is a fireworks display that will be Saturday at the Jordanelle, along with an electric boat parade. There'll be live bands, or a live band, and there's going to be a hot dog eating contest, Beth. What do you think of that?
Oh, if they get Nathan's, I'll come.
How many hot dogs can you eat, you think?
Actually, I don't think I could eat more than two, but in the name of patriotism, maybe I could stuff down five.
Boy, I'd love to take a shot at it. I could probably get some down, but that's probably not the right thing for me to do right now. It might stress me out a little bit. And we'll be talking about stress. Our first guest was stress, of course. So we will have a high today of 82, absolute beautiful sunny day. The low tonight will be 51, and it's going to be blowing 5 to 8 miles an hour from the west. Tomorrow, high of 83, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly after the noon hour, and then mostly sunny with 5 to 7 miles becoming light and variable. Saturday, also high of 83 with, a 30% chance of showers and thunder showers after the noon hour. And then Sunday, it will be 81 for a high with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. So all in all, sounds like a pretty good weekend weather report. We'll see what happens. The cool thing around here is, you know, if you don't like the weather, just wait a minute.
It's been pretty nice out, but last week when it rained every day during the week, my grass must have grown a foot and a half. So I got up yesterday morning at 6 in the morning and tried to mow it when it was cool, and it helped. It really helped. So that's my advice for the week. Anybody that needs to mow their lawn, get up early and do it before the major heat of the noonday sun comes on.
That's great advice. That's great advice, Beth. Well, today's cool story, before I tell you what the cool story is, let me mention that today's cool story was sent to us by Robbie Schumacher. We want to thank Robbie, and we want to let you know if you have a story you'd like to submit for today's cool story, please, probably the best way is just to send me an email, johnwells101@gmail.com. That's johnwells101. 101@gmail.com. Well, I'll tell you what, Beth, we checked this out on Snopes and Snipe, and Is This Story True, and all these different vehicles, and we have found that this story is true, and it's today's cool story, today's interesting story. Flatulence, smelling farts may be good for your health. Next time someone at your office lets out a silent but deadly emission, maybe you should thank them. A new study at University of Exeter in England suggests that exposure to hydrogen sulfide, also known as what your body produces as bacteria breaks down food causing gas, could prevent mitochondria damage. They're saying here that hydrogen sulfide is well known as a pungent, foul-smelling gas in rotten eggs and flatulence, but it's naturally produced by the body, and they have put together small increments called AP39, and they believe that these very small amounts of AP39, flatulence, targeted to certain areas of the body could cure cancer, hypertension. Let's see, what are some of the other things here? Bum, 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 bum. Strokes, heart attacks, arthritis, and dementia by preserving mitochondria.
Well, you know, John, that makes me think of a few people that I know that are going to live forever. I don't know how they do it, but what about dogs? Do you think it works with dogs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're just starting to get their arms around this thing, but it appears that there are some promising benefits. And I took a look and went back and looked at this professor, this doctor's research, and a lot of people are looking at this now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So next time Grandpa lets one go at Thanksgiving dinner.
Thank him.
Thank him.
Yeah, I was in a meeting the other day where there was dog under the table, and he drove us all out of the office. Maybe we should have stayed. I don't know. Weirder things can happen.
Yeah.
Join KPCW every weekday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. for the latest news in town and around the world. Trusted news anchor Leslie Thatcher delivers local news as well as broadcasts of NPR News, Marketplace, and National Stories. Morning Edition with Leslie Thatcher, sponsored by Promontory the Ranch Club, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, and Deer Valley Resort.
Each week, our own Park City radio station, KPCW, produces five public affairs programs. At 9 a.m. weekdays, join us for Mountain Money, This Green Earth, The Mountain Life, Cool Science Radio, and Fun Friday, sponsored in part by San Francisco Design and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties.
So this wraps up another edition of Cool Science Radio with John Wells and myself, Beth Fracken. I'd like to thank our two guests, Rebecca Coffey, author of 20 Things You Didn't Know About Stress, and Jason Silva, National Geographic host of Brain Games, who was with us to discuss National Geographic Expedition Granted.
You are listening to KPCW. Park City. We want to thank San Francisco Design.